Hey, this is Kevin from Kevin's Barbecue Joints, and welcome to episode 100 of the Kevin's Barbecue Joints podcast. In this episode, I'm lucky enough to talk to John Vergas from Charlie Vergas's Rendezvous in Memphis, Tennessee. It is an iconic restaurant. It's been there since 1948 when his dad opened it. It's a great, great story. John tells amazing stories about the history of the restaurant, about Memphis in general, about their shipping business and how they were one of the first people to actually ship barbecue across the country, about the barbecue family, about the people that work at his restaurant. And he has some of the longest standing employees, I think, for a restaurant in the United States. You're going to love this. John's an interesting guy, and as I said, his stories are phenomenal. If you're digging these, please subscribe. That way you don't miss out. I'll be doing at least one of these per week, as well as a bunch of other extra content. And I think only if you, I think you need to subscribe, so that way you can get more than the last 20 episodes on your podcast network. I also have a YouTube channel at youtube.com/Kevin's BBQ Joints with the YouTube versions of these, as well as a bunch more barbecue joint visits and butcher shop visits and sausage making places and really cool stuff. I also have a website at kevinsbbqjoints.com. But enjoy this.
Good morning. First of all, I do want to tell people I have these little that you should go to your dermatologist if you have not been, because you know everybody worries about having a stroke or heart attack or something like that. You'd hate to have some little sun thing, mm-hmm. even thing takes you out. These little patches are. I just visited my dermatologist the other day.
And I have the same thing. I have something I got cut out like last year. Yeah, but yeah. You have to be really, really careful. That's a good way to start this. No, honestly, that's the little public service announcement. That's good. Right. Well, John, I've been meaning to talk to you for a long time, and we've tried to connect for a long time. But I just wanted to know about. Can you start off telling me a little bit about the restaurant history and your family history?
Sure. The name of our restaurant is Charlie Vergas's Rendezvous, and my dad started it in 1948. This is our 70th year. It's in a basement in an alley in downtown Memphis across from the Peabody Hotel. It started as an 80-seat tavern, and it has slowly grown through the years, and now we seat 700 people. And on a busy Saturday, we'll feed, our record's 3,800 people, but on a busy Saturday, we'll feed 2,500 people, which is a little overwhelming.
That's a lot of people. That's a good amount of people.
It's a lot of people. It's a lot of people. And we have a great staff. We've had three people retire the last few years that have been here 50 years apiece.
Incredible.
We still have several employees that have been here 40 some odd years, tons that have been here 35. I mean, 10 years as a newcomer. You don't do it because we're all so charming and the family's so great and all that kind of stuff. But I mean, you do it because we have a great staff that's dedicated and I do want to point out, cause my dad and I used to disagree on many things, but he always said that if you're fortunate enough to be an employee, the best investment one can make is to invest in your staff. And we've always have paid health insurance, dental insurance. Everybody gets almost a month's paid vacation, maternity leave. We've always paid well above minimum wage, sick days. And it really does kind of chap my ass a little bit when I hear politicians talk about small businesses and they can't afford this and it'll put them out of business. And I don't think any of them have been employers, because the worst thing that ever happens is to a business is turnover. And it's so much better to pay that extra and do those extra things to keep your staff.
Yeah. And also in staffing them up and getting them up to speed, getting a new employee up to speed, that takes a lot of work and it's expensive. And
hiring and firing is such a pain. It's what I hate doing more than anything. Although I tell people I've never fired anybody. You always fire yourself at the Rendezvous, but for example, our workers' comp rates are the lowest in Tennessee. And the reason that's so is our guys know what they're doing. They're not slicing their fingers off or locking themselves up in freezers or bashing their heads or slipping on floors. I mean, nobody gets injured very often, where if you go to another restaurant, people are always running their hands through the shredder.
Yeah. Either on purpose or just because they're not paying attention. Yeah. No, And it's also interesting too, because what you're doing, it seems like something that's like almost done in Europe, because people have restaurant careers, whereas the United States, not everyone, employees-wise, have restaurant careers. Like, you can have a...
And, you know, I do think, I mean, we've always done it that way. I do think that's changing in the food business now, just like, you know, people that work in kitchens. You know, we used to call them cooks. Now they're chefs.
True.
And I think servers take more pride in what they're doing. I think that people have learned to tip a little better. And I think, I mean, we've got, you know, several college grads that have been with us 15 years because they just discovered they can work down here and make more money than going to work for a bank. And they like the speed of it. They like the action, and they like, you know, they like the mixing with people instead of being locked away in an office.
Yeah. There's something to be said about that customer service, that interaction with people. It's if you, most people love that, and that's great.
Yeah. And you know, and I'm going to, but you, since you're interviewing me, so I'll get a chance to brag about my restaurant.
Yeah, go ahead, please.
I mean, the Rendezvous, it's one of the unique restaurants around. I mean, it's a fascinating place to work. You never know who's going to walk through the front door. You know, you just, I'm involved in an email group, and I was just mentioning to them the other day that working at the Rendezvous has kind of given me a front row seat to history. I mean, just the other day, whether you agree with him or not, the acting attorney general was in Memphis. I mean, here's this guy that's in the middle of a major political battle, and he shows up in my restaurant, you know? And so, you know, we're nice to him. We, you know, I've seen, you know, presidents, I've seen, you know, John McCain, Prince Harry, Prince William, you know, the Rolling Stones have been down here several times. My dad actually tried to kick them out in 1960. Because they were so raggedy looking.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Until he found out who they were, and then they kind of stayed up all night and drank, and they kind of got a kick out of them. So every time they came, they would come to the Rendezvous. Mick Jagger had his, in 1999, had his, I guess it was his 60th birthday party. They rented the hole upstairs and actually got their instruments out and played. We have a picture of that.
Oh, that's so great.
So, you know, we've had, you know, from Justin Timberlake to John Grisham to you name who's been, I mean, the notorious to the infamous. So, and our servers, I mean, I remember Al Gore, we were doing something for Al Gore, and he blew right by me and went and gave Percy, one of our waiters that retired recently, a big hug. You know, I mean, that, so those, they know our servers, you know, I mean, they're more famous than the restaurant is.
For a lot of them, it probably seems like they're coming home. It's coming, like, it's stopping back at home to have something that they're familiar with.
Well, people like to be, you know, even famous people like to be recognized as, you know, and they like to feel comfortable. We never, you know, we have a lot of pictures of celebrities, but we never ask to take pictures. We never posted on anything. You know, we like them to feel comfortable. They can come down here. Now, sometimes people say, you know, here, if you want to post something, here's this. You want to have a picture, and of course, we're happy to do that. But we never, like when Prince Harry and Prince William came down, we knew 8 months ahead of time they were going to come, and so we didn't announce it. Nobody knew about that they were coming here till a few hours.
Do they, like a situation like that, do they shut the restaurant down or a portion of the restaurant down? How does that?
Well, when the presidents come, we pretty much shut everything down. But when they came, we have an upstairs, it's a party room. And so we shut that area.
Okay.
So there was quite a bit of security for that. That was really pretty fascinating because there were so many people and so much paparazzi. It was almost like the Academy Awards when they were in and out.
They can't do anything in public without it being documented.
No, you know, it was kind of cool. They were very nice. I mean, they were, you know, William was very, he was, you know, calm and all that. And Harry drank a lot. I mean, they were exactly the way you would imagine them to be. I was surprised because all the Brits loved Jack Daniels and Coke. J&D and Coke is what they all wanted. And I guess they thought it's kind of like eating homegrown tomatoes, but that's what they all drank all of that. So, and as a matter of fact, we don't have a mixed drink. We have beer and wine, but just one second. This came from Prince Harry and Prince William's reception.
That's a suit. Oh, that's really cool.
I think the question was originally about our staff, and I think I kind of went off into talking about.
No, this is good. People love. No, I love. I'm tangential.
It's just unique. It's, and if you ever, But when my dad started, what happened is my dad started a diner. He was in World War II, and he got out of World War II and started a diner with his brother-in-law. And it just didn't really work. And so he said, they couldn't get out of the lease. He said, look, you keep the diner. We'll kind of work it together for a while, but I'm going to go in the basement and do something. So I went in the basement and cleaned it up. And the way he decorated it is he just kind of went up and down Main Street, and any things he would find, he would just hang it up on the wall. And over the course of the years, if you ever come down here, it's just full of stuff. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the stuff that was just junk in those days is now really fascinating memorabilia, priceless
pieces
antique.
Of history, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we have everything from a signed W.C. Handy copy of the Blues, of Memphis Blues, to, you know, an antique gun collection, to an antique bank collection, to furniture, to art, to, I don't know, we can't get it appraised because it's so varied. It would take probably 100 different appraisers to come in, you know, and appraise it all. So if you come down, you can spend almost as much time just wandering around looking at the stuff that we have.
When he opened up the basement, was he opening up with like a little beer bar or something?
It was just going to be a tavern, and he was just going to just bake stuff in the diner, bring it down, and just kind of sell it. It really started just ham and cheese sandwiches, and it was kind of dark. And in those days, so many cities in the South, including Memphis, were Memphis wasn't dry, but you could not buy – you could only get beer. And so, you know, people could bring their bottle in to keep the bottle for you. And so a lot of business owners downtown, you know, your place, they'd sneak off and come down. And so and that's what he did for many years. And he made a living at it. And I mean, you make a lot of money selling a pitcher of water and a bucket of ice set up if somebody brings his bottle of bourbon down there. So he but then he discovered these coal chutes over there. And, you know, we're Greek, so he grew up in the restaurant business, and he knows how to cook. And so he kind of sealed it up and got charcoal, because in Memphis, everybody uses charcoal when they grill. And, you know, found out, number one, it would draw. And then, number two, he just started experimenting with chicken and lamb and just all kinds of different things. When people come down and say, try this, try that. And in those days, ribs were really a scrap product. In the South, people would use them on the 4th of July, Memorial Day, or Labor Day. And it was like – and it was really kind of the product that the African-American community used, because they historically would use the scrap meats, you know, I mean, hence – chitlins and neck bones and oxtail and all these that other people didn't want, and they learned how to do something with them. So they were just laying around. And so somebody came to my dad, said, why don't you try these out? And so he started smoking and grilling these ribs. And at first he started doing, because we're Greek and Greeks based all their meats with lemon or vinegar, and so and sure. Then salt, pepper, oregano, and garlic. So I mean, that's really what he was doing, and they tasted okay. But they were okay. Mm-hmm. And then he went to New Orleans and he got into the chili powders and the cayenne peppers and all that spicy Cajun seasonings. And when he came back to Memphis, he took the seasoning, the Greek seasoning, the Cajun seasoning, and mixed it together, still basting it with vinegar. And so hence that's, you know, dry ribs. I mean, he invented dry rub. He invented rub for all, and I always challenged people to show me somebody that was doing anything remotely similar to this, you know, in the 40s. And I don't think you'll find it.
I don't think you will.
And so, you know, it's just a unique way of cooking. And, you know, and again, this, it wasn't like it just it hit. And
yeah, I was going to say, what was the original reaction?
Well, you know, people liked it, but he never advertised, and it just took, you know, word of mouth. And again, we always, you know, I mean, I remember, you know, growing up in a one-bedroom duplex with my brother, sister, and I. But, I mean, you know, we lived okay, and we kind of moved out to the burbs. But then about the early to mid-60s, a gentleman by the name of Kemmons Wilson, who started Holiday Inns, and he started in the 50s, but he happened upon the Rendezvous, and he loved our ribs. And so – and I always give him a hard time, used to give him a hard time. He loved our prices. They were cheap. And he would – so he started bringing all of his franchisees, his lenders, his partners, because Memphis was the home of Holiday Inn.
Okay.
And so through that connection and then some other connections, that's how people started to hear about the Rendezvous. Because when you have the guy that's president of Holiday Inn coming into your business and he's bringing all these people, I mean, that's the hospitality industry.
Without a doubt,
in those days, I mean, it was Holiday Inn or Howard Johnson's hotels. Mm-hmm. You didn't have all these other.
No, I grew up in the furniture business, the hospitality end. And so my dad, I'm fourth generation, so I kind of know about how that is the hospitality business, and that's all there was at the time.
Yeah, and as a matter of fact, Kemmons Wilson, they finally made him break it up. But what he would do if you bought a franchise, he had a furniture company, a carpet mm-hmm. company, a bed company, and you have to buy it all from his companies. And ultimately, the government made because the antitrust, that made him break that up.
Yeah, you buy the packages. Yeah, no, I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. So he not only made money on the hotels, he made money on the furniture side and the toilet paper side.
That's smart. Yeah.
So I want to kind of say the rest is history. And it was, but we've had two fires, neither of which were our fault. And one was the fire department said we'd be closed for 10 months and we were open in 10 days, shut down one side and pumped all the water out. And we've survived recessions. We've survived the assassination of Dr. King because we're in downtown Memphis. When downtown Memphis shut down, we survived when everybody bailed out of downtown Memphis. There was a period of time when the Peabody Hotel was closed. I mean, there were only two restaurants open in downtown Memphis after 6 o'clock. And we would say in those days, if you were in downtown Memphis, you were either lost or looking for the Rendezvous. So we've survived a lot and still, restaurant business is still a tough business. I mean, a lot of competition, now with social media, people tend to beat you up. It's really easy for somebody. In the old days, my dad, if you didn't like what he was serving, he just said, well, just get your ass out of here.
And don't come back.
Don't come back. And he was not a problem. And plus, he was a big, burly guy, so you didn't mess with him. But now, people, get online and talk to 10,000 followers and tell people what a jerk you are. So
they could do it anonymously or non-anonymously. Yeah.
Well, like we were talking preliminarily, I mean, especially in the barbecue business, now for some reason, you don't rate, oh, this is the best French food I've ever had, or Paducah's got much better French food than does. But for some reason, barbecue has to, boy, Jim's in North Carolina or North Dakota is much better than the Rendezvous. So we get a lot of that, and we're kind of a visible target, and people have certain expectations. So, it's okay. We our business is good, but when you're in a business and somebody really beats you up, it's like somebody saying your kids are asshole, just step.
Because you care about it. You really do care about it.
Well, it just hits hard. But we do, people said don't read them, but we do learn things from them. I mean, some people do offer legitimate criticism, or, they'll say, they'll tell us sometimes that we're, we've fallen down on something and, we're here all the time and there's always a family member, but we can miss, and I tell people, look, if you ever have a bad order of ribs, let us know. Mm-hmm. I mean, because we can burn them up with the best of them. Mm-hmm. We sell a lot of ribs and also ribs are kind of an inconsistent. I mean, every slab of ribs is not, sure. It's not like, beef is much more uniform when they cut a tenderloin up because normally most people will do that by hand, but ribs, nobody's over there butchering a hog and selling ribs in his restaurants.
Not many, if there's any, there may be one. So when did your family start? When did your father realize that this was something special? And also, were you destined to go into the business or did you have any other plans?
Well, my brother and I really have worked, since we were kids. My sister came in about 30 years ago. Now I went to law school and I practiced law for 15 years. And then I came back mm-hmm. into the business in 1988. And so even when I went to law, really, when I got out of college, I wanted to have a law degree. And I thought I was going to just get a law degree and go to work with my business, with my dad. But he let me know in uncertain terms, he didn't really want me down there. And so I practiced law and he just didn't want some young guy telling him what to do, and still never did. But I'm actually kind of glad that I did. And then, I did come back, and then he started cutting back and he developed Alzheimer's pretty much in the late 90s, and he had and it's one of those things where you really didn't know that he had it for a while. You just noticed that he was making kind of some irrational decisions and things like, why are you doing that? So, and again, you know, when I say you survive things, you know, if you're in a family business, transitioning is difficult. You know, my daughters are in the business now, you know, third generation. So trying to figure out what their role is going to be. There are 8 grandkids to see who's going to come in, who's not going to come in, those that don't want to come in. Is there some way to remunerate them in some way? It's difficult. You want to try to keep peace.
Mm-hmm. And now, did you, when you came back in at that time, were you guys starting to do the shipping, or I forget when you guys?
Well, my brother's the one that really started doing the shipping, and he would. And I'll tell you how that really happened. Is we had an uncle that worked for Delta Airlines for years and years, and so what we would do for starters is Delta was based in Atlanta, and so he was with Delta when it was Chicago and Southern Airlines. And so he knew the desk clerks and the travel people at all over. So if somebody was in Charlotte and wanted an order of ribs, well, he knew he'd give it to the stewardess that's going to Atlanta who passed it off to the stewardess that's going to Charlotte. And so
that's so cool. That's so unique.
Little system. Unfortunately, we weren't smart enough like Fred Smith at Federal Express. We didn't take it and take it to the next level. But so we always had gotten ribs to different people and shipped it, you know, that way. But when FedEx started in Memphis, it was just a natural way for us to ship. And so we did that. And then we found out early on that you have to do a USDA kitchen anytime you ship meat across state lines. Now, they softened those regulations a little bit, but at that time, they're very strict about it. We were going to build one, and then my dad decided he didn't want to do it. Well, actually, my dad thought he could pick up the phone and call the governor or the senator and tell him, Fergus, I want to ship my ribs. I don't care what the regulations say. And he found it very quickly that
– that's so funny.
Much care about that. The law is the law. And so we got out of the business for a while, and then we finally built our USDA kitchen. And so we're still – shipping now. One reason Fred Smith at FedEx has always been partial to us. So, I mean, we're the first people to start shipping. And now, of course, as you know, food is shipped. I think Omaha Steaks was the only other people that were shipping and making a career at shipping food. But now everything's shipped.
Yeah, and I talked to almost anybody, and they're starting some sort of business so that they could ship.
We're a little pricier than some because we ship priority one overnight because we don't use styrofoam.
Okay.
We don't want to use it, and you know, because a lot of different issues, disposal issues, and also, so if you order our ribs, you got to pay a little extra because it's coming overnight. So if you call today at 4, they'd be at your door tomorrow morning at 10:30.
That's awesome to know. And what do you offer via shipment?
Our ribs, slaw, beans, popcorn, shoulder, and you get t-shirts and aprons, salt, seasoning. And our barbecue nachos.
You ship the nachos?
Well, we ship everything separately. So all you got to do is heat up the meat, heat up the cheese. We use Poncho's cheese, which is wonderful cheese dip. We have a lady that makes local jalapenos, Flo's jalapenos. And so we ship a bag of chips, 2 pounds of pork, nacho cheese, our sauce and seasoning. And they're good.
Is that something you can get overnight too?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Gosh. Okay.
I think it's $99, and if you do like for a Super Bowl party or something, you can have nachos for about 14 or 15 people. So that's not too pricey.
No, not at all. And that's great. And it's something special too. It's for a special event. So when people come, what can they expect from your restaurant? Because a lot of people that are watching this may not have, or you're on their bucket list, but they have never been.
You know, well, I hope that number one, when they, I wish I could have temporary amnesia so I could experience what people experience when they walk down the steps. But they're going to walk down an alley, and it's not dingy. It's lit up. It's safe and all, but some people get a little freaked by it.
Just the fact that it's an alley.
And you may bump into a panhandler along the way, but they're harmed. I mean, no one's ever been injured going to an rendezvous. You're going to come to a door, and you're going to walk down some steps, and then this enormous place is just going to unfold. You're going to also notice a smell that, again, I'm oblivious. It's just like people that hang around horses. They don't notice the manure, but this is But this is a wonderful smell. As a matter of fact, a lot of people smell it all over downtown Memphis because our stacks go up.
That's true.
But notice this, the combination of smell and our seasoning. So that, I think that's the first thing that's going to hit you. You have a great jukebox, so you hear great music. And hopefully you'll be seated promptly. The waits are overrated. They're not, you know, occasionally you have to wait a while, but generally you get seated pretty promptly. And, you know, the server will be there very promptly, quickly, friendly.
What's the go-to order for someone that the first timer?
I think that they're going to probably urge you to get a cheese and sausage appetizer plate, which is really great cheese, pickled peppers, our sausage with our seasoning on it, crackers. It's finger food. Don't eat it with a knife and fork. Take a cracker, put a piece of cheese, a piece of sausage, and some sauce or cheese on it, and eat it and chase it with the pickle. They probably, you know, if it's just a husband and wife, the issue is should you split an order of ribs or she gets a small whatever. So you'll probably have that conversation. Or some, you know, one may get an order of ribs, one may get a chicken breast, half chicken's really good. Or, you know, you may get a Greek salad. Yeah, our brisket. My daughter's over here prompting me. So to produce.
Hey, that's good. It's a family.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And, you know, brisket or a nachos. But I mean, our waiters are good at having conversations about, you know, what is it, you know, what did you come from? But I think the go-to thing is probably get a cheese and sausage appetizer plate. And the thing you should probably get is maybe ribs or rib brisket combo.
And they should expect to have the dry rub on the ribs. That's something maybe people aren't used to.
Yes. The only thing, yeah, the ribs will come. There's sauce on the side, hot and mild, on the table. And so when right before we serve the ribs, we baste it with our vinegar solution, and then we put our seasoning on last. We don't rub anything. And when we're cooking, we're basting ribs with the vinegar because it does several things. It keeps the flames down, and it kind of steams the pit and causes it moist. And one other thing, we don't take the membrane off the ribs. People just think, what rookies, they don't take the membrane off. We've never taken the membrane off the ribs for one reason. Number one, it keeps the juices in. And number two, by the time you're through cooking, it crisps up to nothing.
Yeah, yeah.
So anyway, but we, again, these foodies, the worst of the barbecue, I'm a judge in a barbecue contest. I'm an officially certified barbecue judge, and I can't believe they don't take the membrane off the ribs. Anyway. Matter of fact, when we have the barbecue contest in Memphis, I can always spot them because, you know, somebody puts a thing of food up. You know, nowadays, first of all, you got to take a picture.
Of course, you can't eat it without a picture, yeah.
Without a picture. But, you know, then you start eating. But these guys are picking and looking at it. And, you know, I just want to say, eat the damn thing. You know, just looking at it and passing it around all. So, anyway, you can always spot them. But you know, that's it. So if you get the order of ribs, we base it with our vinegar juice. And the way I would eat them is take a rib, they're partially cut, dip it in that juice, and eat them.
Oh.
If you want to add a little sauce, I put it in that vinegar base and mix it and eat it. Some people just do that with the sauce. I wish that they wouldn't. But our waiters do urge you to eat the ribs as they are. And you'll get a side of beans, a side of slaw. 4 ounces, not a thimbleful. It's plenty of beans and slaw. If you want extra, it's $1.75. If you know, you know, I'm being facetious because we get criticized about, gosh, the sides were so small. But I will say this about slaw. Slaw fascinates me. I always think it's kind of innocuous, but some people just hate slaw.
Really?
I mean, they think of it as something akin to liver or something. Ugh, no slaw. But number one, ours are different. It's mustard vinegar base, and it's also a 100-year-old recipe. My grandfather had a hot dog stand on Beale Street in 1916, and that was a slaw that he would put on his hot dogs. And so it's the same one we have, exact same recipe we have today.
Oh, that's interesting.
It's really good. I mean, I love it, and it's still good on a hot dog. But so you're going to get beans and slaw. If you want potato salad, it's extra. We have good potato salad. No fries. We don't have anything fried down here. No coffee, no dessert. You know, we've been touring with dessert. You know, my cousin's mother make wonderful strawberry shortcake and banana pudding and all that kind of stuff. And we just, you know, we've been so busy through the years and turnover. But, you know, we've kind of slowed the place down a little bit. We take more reservations than we used to, and okay. So we really want to play dessert. If not, we send people over to the Peabody that's got a dessert tray that'll knock you over. There's a restaurant called Cookie Canute that's got some ice cream dishes about a foot tall.
Yeah, so they could do that. That's something that I was going to ask. You probably send people places. Get a chance to explore a little bit more, too, so they have a chance to go to the Rendezvous and then have a dessert.
Yeah, anyone that comes, they should go to the Peabody Hotel in Memphis. That's the one with the ducks in
the
lobby.
I was going to say, is that the one with the ducks? Yes.
Yeah. It's a great, great old historic hotel. It's one of the classics.
So we had talked a little bit off camera about the people have come to you and asked you to open up other locations, potentially a franchise. And there was one I'd heard, my friend said London, but then you said Australia as well. They had come to you for that?
Well, we've had really great offers to franchise, and it's just, I don't know. We just never did it. Several reasons. Number one, we make a nice living. I mean, we're not flying around the private jets, but we do okay. We educate our kids and pay off our mortgages and travel, and life is good. Mm-hmm. And the Rendezvous is so unique, we just could not imagine it in the strip center. Although I think we would have done well. I mean, we've had offers to go to Vegas and New York and Miami. I mean, you can imagine.
Yeah.
But the only time somebody asked us about going to London, and somebody asked us about going to Austin, both places, same investors. And we thought, okay, we'll just, because we own everything now, but we'll just get joint ventures and go overseas. And so we went to, it was 2006, 2007, and we went to London and looked around. Two problems with that. Number one, the guys that wanted to invest kept looking at central London. I mean, they were looking at, Kensington and Trafalgar Square, and some of the most expensive real estate
on the planet.
World. Yeah. And I kept saying, don't you have a little dumpy warehouse or alley kind of out of the way over here that we could go in there and make some money? Because, I mean, we'd have to charge $50 for an order of ribs to pay. And so they kind of got it, but they didn't get it. They were, we said, go to the economic development office in London and see what area they think needs to grow. Because I mean, I think that's where the Rendezvous would fit. But the other thing, the recession hit not long thereafter, and we just
that's true. 2008, 2009. Yeah.
Yeah. And so we kind of, and we kind of abandoned the plans. I will tell you, when we went to Australia, it was when President Bush was here with the Prime Minister of Japan. And so when we were in Australia, one of the guys that was interested said something like, well, do people know of you and what's your reputation like and, what kind of people you have? I said, to tell you the truth, as we speak, the President of the United States and the Prime Minister of Japan are having lunch at my restaurant. And he goes, oh, bullshit. I said, no. And it was in the paper.
Oh, that's hilarious. That is awesome.
Bigger coincidence. But so anyway, no, we're happy where we are. Yeah. We ship our business. The way we want to grow is we really do want to put our seasoning, get our seasoning and sauce distributed more widely in grocery stores. It's in about 1,000 stores now, but that's not a lot. Grocery store business it's tough, because what happens, I originally thought that I would just call up a grocery store and tell them, I'm John Burgess of the Rendezvous, and they would just open their arms and welcome me, thinking, we've been waiting for you all these years. But we quickly found out that the big companies, the Colgates, Nabisco's, those control, 85% of the shelf.
And, oh, without a doubt.
And the rest of the chumps like us are fighting for that 15% to get it. So it's tough. And which surprises me, because so many people want to eat local and want to eat independent.
Unique product.
Yeah, want a unique product and don't want to nothing wrong with Kraft barbecue sauce, but it's Kraft barbecue sauce. There's so many other good, unique.
Well, just like anything else, but there's a lot of people really going into it with their passion. That it'd be nice for them to have opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. Whether it's pickles or cheeses or whatever it is. But I mean, it surprises me that there's not more space for locals.
Certain places, but they're really expensive supermarkets that have those too, it seems. Yeah. So is there anything else that people should know about Rendezvous that we haven't covered? Because I, I, I always recommend people to go there, but I wanted
Thank
to.
you.
Oh, do you do? Is it? It's direct, right? You guys cook direct. It's not indirect cooking.
If you look at our
Yeah,
pits,
that's.
the racks are about 20 inches above the charcoal, and so we cook bone side down, then we flip over and cook. And it takes about an hour and a half, hour to an hour and a half, depending how the pits are running, to cook. And people talk about, I smoke my ribs for 7 hours. I mean, there's only that much meat.
There's not a
Yeah, there's only a little. I mean, it's one thing if you're smoking a deer, or a big hog, but I mean, it's that much. So it doesn't take that long to cook. And so, somebody said, well, you're just not true barbecue, which I thought to myself, well, who made you the
Yeah,
arbiter of
exactly.
what's truly barbecue? But, I tell people, first of all, I think everybody should come to Memphis. I think it's a great city and it's a great foodie town. There's tons of family restaurants that have been. Memphis has always been an ethnic town. People don't realize this. A lot of Lebanese, a lot of Jewish people, a lot of Catholic, I mean Italians, Irish, Greeks. So there's really great restaurants and even barbecue. And I tell people, there's really good barbecue all over town, all over Memphis. And I know because I eat it. But I do think if you do come to Memphis and you have one night, I think you should come to the Rendezvous because I think it's one of the unique restaurants. There's just not anything like it. And I think a lot of people that come kind of marvel at it. I mean, the hustle and the bustle and everything around it.
And the hour, so it's 7 days a week, right?
No. We're closed Sunday. We started 7 days a week. We're closed Sundays and Mondays, and we're only open lunch on Fridays and Saturdays. However, if you come down Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, we're always cooking, and so we'll serve you an order ribs if you come down. And the door's always open. So, every day we'll have 20 or 30 people. And what happened is in the old days when you didn't have security checks at the airport, people would fly and have a 2 or 3 hour layover, so they'd jump in a cab and come downtown and go to the Rendezvous, and we'd be closed, and my dad didn't have the heart to not feed him because they just made this super effort to get here. So he started feeding people. And so we kind of carry that on today. So, and one other item that we have that's really good, but you have to order it a day ahead of time, is a 5 pound skillet of barbecued shrimp. And it's $150, but it'll feed 10, 8 or 10 people as an entree and 20 people, 25 people as an appetizer. It's really good. So that's.
So, do a lot of people know about that, or is that
Locals will know about it, but
just call ahead?
yeah, you got to give us a day's notice on that. But we don't promote it so much. We probably should, but we don't. A lot of things you should do. We we'll get around to it. But
That's really neat. That's a unique item.
yeah, it is a unique item. But we're still a family business, and it's just we don't have executive vice presidents, and we don't have corporate managers of marketing and all that. It's just us. And so sometimes things we need to do and would like to do, we just don't quite get around to it all the time. But it works.
No, it definitely works, and what you're doing is really important for Memphis and for the country. And I so appreciate you taking the time because I know you're a busy guy, and you
Not
obviously
that
had to.
busy. Just for some reason, it seemed like it would. When I was going to do it the first time, I had a doctor's appointment, then you had a doctor's
Yeah, and then
appointment,
a
and
dental appointment, I think.
I was out of the country. I was in Morocco for about 2 or 3 weeks, which you should go to Morocco. It's a really great country.
Wow, no, and that's a problem. Morocco is not probably high on people's list to go to. What?
Well, I always kind of wanted to go, but
Yeah,
that's what
same
I
with
can
me.
do in my spare time. I just turned 70, so
Oh, happy birthday. You don't look 70.
well, thank you. You don't need
I know, amazing. I turned 75.
yeah. But in my old age, what I tell people, my splurges in life is I do try to fly business class, and I don't spend a lot of time looking for lost golf balls. So those are my two splurges.
That's great. That's a great way to end this. Well, thank you, John, so much.
I
And
appreciate it so much. Thank you. And shoot, let me know when this, how to see it.
I'll no, it'll be on YouTube as well as a podcast.
Okay, cool.
Thank you so
Thanks.
much. Cool. Have a great weekend.
All right,
So
likewise.
look forward to meeting you.